Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This podcast is brought to you by Epicor Profit 21 ERP. Purpose built for distributors. In sports, the best teams don't chase the scoreboard. They set the pace. And in distribution, pace matters. 60% of top distributors run on Epicor Profit 21 ERP. It's ERP purpose built for distribution, enhanced with agentic AI that doesn't just inform, but acts. Optimizing inventory, streamlining purchasing, and making every day easier. Don't play catch up. Visit epicor.com/win.
Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Friday, March 27th, the year of our Lord, 2026. This is Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. I'm going to adjust my camera here for a second. Hope you're all doing well today. It's a Friday. TGIF. That's always, gosh, this week went by fast. I'll be honest. I kind of blinked, and here we are on a Friday. Great Sweet 16 action last night. Arkansas got blown out by Arizona. I had them in my bracket. Those of you that are in the ITG bracket challenge, you know, yours truly is kind of bringing up the rear right now, but I still have hope for St. John's. I think I've underestimated Arizona. Arizona beat Arkansas 109-88, and I think I've kind of underestimated them. I did have Illinois, so good thing I kind of bet with my heart there. Not that I'm an Illinois fan, but my friends are, so they beat Houston last night. A really good game between Iowa and Nebraska. Iowa wins. There's the D2 coach, Ben McCollum. I keep telling everybody that those of you that are, want Landon Powell from North Greenville to eventually get the head baseball coaching job at Carolina this offseason, I don't think it's crazy, because there's a guy that was long tenured at a D2 school, won a bunch of national titles like Landon's done, and then ended up going to Drake. And then the next year he's at Iowa. Iowa is now in the Elite Eight. So there you go. Go figure. They knocked out Nebraska. That was crazy that was a Sweet 16 basketball game. Texas dropped a heartbreaker to Purdue Pete, my favorite mascot, last night. I thought the Longhorns were going to get them. So both SECs that played last night are out. Alabama and Tennessee in action in Chicago tonight, so that'll be good. Alabama plays Michigan. Seems like a bowl game, right? But seems like the same teams, Not that every basketball program is good in football as well, but in the tournament this year, last year it was all a bunch of, one seeds and all that. This year, SEC, Big Ten have kind of taking over that too. So I don't know that's good for college sports. Just don't know about that. But we can talk about that on JC and Morgan are the show. This is Coffee, of course. We got some football talk, but kind of just going through what's happening today at Chief Sports. Had some unfortunate, call them technical difficulties with Four Quarter Friday today. So no Four Quarter Friday. I apologize for that. Although it's, just kind of, as the spokesperson for Chief, owner of the company, and I was in on some conversations last night. That show will be back. We do have a combo show again on Fridays, like we've been doing with myself, Jamie Bradford, the Mad Dog Phil Mullinax. Got a lot of guests starting at 10 a.m. To 1 p.m. Will Crow, former Gamecock pitcher, will join us. He's going to kind of be Stewart's replacement, since Stewart's now coaching Stewart Lake, the conversations with JB. We'll gladly sacrifice that for our guy to get a chance to go back on the field, right? But that's going to go away. Stewart's going to be in and out on the morning show with JB for the rest of the season, just not on Fridays, obviously. So Will's going to step in, and so he'll be along. John Strickland will be in to talk football. Lots of good spring football talk with him. Rafael Esparza will tell you how to win some money on the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight this weekend. and the opening days around the country for Major League Baseball. Braves opened, White Sox opened last night, and with the Brewers, 14-2. Stellar, folks, stellar. So anyway, that's off to a rousing start. So he's going to get into all that with you. Rafael Esparza, Derek Scott, the voice of the Gamecocks, will join us right off the top. He's either in Athens or heading to Athens for the baseball series this weekend. First pitch tonight against the seventh-ranked Dogs. Never gets any easier, does it, folks? Set for 6:30, Josh Gunther, 7-1, 6.33 ERA. You know, my thing that I've observed with him is it seems to be like good outing, bad outing, good outing, bad outing. You remember the opener against Northern Kentucky? He came in relief, actually, shut him down, and then got a start and wasn't all that great. And then the Clemson game and then the Florida game. I mean, those were fantastic. Some of the best pitching performances a Carolina pitcher's had this year. Then other games, he just hadn't had his stuff, hadn't had it, you know, kind of hadn't found the strike zone, but he's going to get the call. Joey Volchko, 4-0, 4.23 ERA, 33 strikeouts, 14 walks, will get the start for the Dogs. Their pitching's probably not as great as Arkansas's and Florida's, but they knock the cover off the ball. They just jack it over the fence, and it's been under Wes Johnson, their coach. It's just kind of been that way since he got there. It's amazing because he's a pitching coach, you know. And that shows you, too, like us helmet heads that are football people, you know, you get a defensive-minded head football coach, you know, chances are with very few exceptions. You know, Brent Venables is one that comes to mind that he likes to go wide open on offense, but – you know, chances are they're going to be a little conservative, you know, maybe kind of have to drag them into the 21st century sometimes on offense because they're wanting to protect the defense. But in baseball, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can have a guy that's a great hitting coach, that's the head coach, that's, I guess, you know, and then they play small ball and pitch, play defense, you know, and then they got this guy, and Georgia's just about lighting it up, scoring runs and power bats. That's the philosophy down there. So interesting series. You know, I'd like to tell you that I think the Gamecocks will go in there and turn it around, but you know, this team's really good. So is Texas. I mean, yeah, I think it's more about holding your head above water through the Texas series. But with, you know, Carolina's pitching, the frontline pitching, sometimes it's quite good. And it's been a bright spot this year when you've looked and gone, wow. You know, it's been when a Gunther, an Amp Phillips, or a Alex Valentin, you know, or a Brandon Stone has had a good outing. And so you never know. You're only as good as your next starting pitcher. That's a Earl Weaver quote Monty Lee and Jamie Bradford used the other day. So 6:30 is first pitch there. Didn't want to mention the Equestrian because I've been – very curious about Equestrian this year. They're in the SEC, I guess, championship tournament semifinals. They play Georgia over in Auburn, 11 a.m. You can watch that on SEC Network Plus if you're sitting around the office. Of course, we'll be on during that time too, so maybe you can do split screen. Softball not in action until 3 o'clock Saturday at number 12 Mississippi State. Boy, everybody's ranked, right? And then the Gamecock women, we talked to – or they talked to Brad Muller out in Sacramento yesterday. They will play Oklahoma at 5. ESPN, I believe Jamie said the Gamecocks were 17.5-point favorites against the team that handed them their only SEC loss of the year. And then TCU will play Virginia, and the winner there will play the Gamecocks or the Sooners. So we'll see what happens out there as the Gamecocks look to get to another Final Four out in Phoenix, Arizona, home of the men's Final Four in 17 that I got to go to. It was one of the greatest experiences of my Gamecock life, and I'm sure for many of y'all. And sad loss that day to Gonzaga. That was a heck of a basketball game. Enjoyed every minute of it. Sad loss. So anyway, that's what's going on around Chief and around Gamecock land for the weekend. I want to remind everybody, sign up for the newsletter insidethegamecocks.com. It has some information about the forthcoming website, which will launch in May. And also, you can get on our newsletter. It's about, like I said, 5% of the total coverage that you'll get. It's not some place you go right now, the newsletter, to get all your breaking news, but a lot of good scoop and analysis. Jamie Bradford's baseball bulletin is must read material for those that love baseball, softball insider reports, football stuff. And if you got it yesterday, you'd know that there's a new, I'm not going to say a new first team offensive line, because they're definitely, you know, when Beamer talked last year about their mixing and matching and all that good stuff, and Randy Clements said it this week, they definitely are. But the offensive line that lined up first this time, there are three that were in kind of the first time we identified it with an open practice. Three are the same. The interior is the same. You got Carter Miller at center. You got big Hank Purvis, Baymax, that's what I call him. And that's not an insult. That's because he's massive. But going from 360 to 335 and actually looks really good physically. And then everybody's guy that they like to talk about, East Carolina transfer, Kojo Poku at right guard. So Purvis is at left guard, Miller's at center, Poku's at right. Now, the tackles were different. Shed Surratt was lining up at left. And my understanding is he looked pretty decent doing it. Pretty good. Not decent, good. And then Dane Arnett, the transfer from Ferris State, he slid in at right. Previously, Seth Smith was at left, and Shed was at right. Now, what do I think is going to happen with this? I think, you know, and I'd also, you know, Nolan Hay was rotating in at center a little bit too. Now, I'd be surprised if Carter Miller was not the center. I mean, Nolan Hay is going to have to beat him out. And I heard Carter Miller looks, as we expected, tough as nails, just a ball of muscle. He's not that tall, about a 6'1", 6'2" guy. I don't really mind that in the center. Do you guys? I don't know that a 6'7" center or 6'6" center is great, because, you know, you can't see. Of course, Carolina's quarterback 6'4½", so you should be able to see, but, I think playing a leverage game with strength and toughness and butt kicking and knowing, most importantly at center, knowing what to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important. Is everything there. And they targeted center was like, and I talked about it, but when they went after offensive line, center was almost like as high of a priority as tackle. Tackle was important, obviously. And tackle's obviously more expensive, but they felt like, in the portal heading into 2025, I believe Jordan White's his name, from Liberty, that started at Vanderbilt at center. It kind of got into a bidding war. Vandy offered a bit more. Probably could have squeezed it out, but, you know, it's kind of like, well, you know, we'll just go find another center. Well, number one, I think after seeing what happened, that kind of changed the philosophy a bit. Number two, that's the one portal guy they did not get, they regretted, but then just because of the issues they had, and nobody really saw the Boaz Stanley thing coming and the problems at center. And, you know, you really missed Vershawn Lee last year up front big time. So they identified Carter Miller from the start, and I think he'll start, but hey, Nolan A's doing a pretty good job. You know, Nolan may have been the starting center for the rest of the year last year, because he played against Missouri and then got hurt and redshirted, big Texas kid. So that's what's going on there on the offensive line. And John Strickland will be by to talk about all that on the show later today. Very interesting. I am, you know, with Shed at left tackle, I'm a little less concerned. You know, ideally, you know, Jacarius Pete gets back and then Shed's your right. Right. That's two good players. That's ideal in an ideal world. Cause I think they like the interior guys. I think the interior is going to be good. So that's ideal. But if you have to train Shed at left, you know, just because you want to put your best five out there, that's fine. Now Arnett is interesting to me because he's a Ferris State transfer. Shout out Trinidad Chambliss. He's a Midwest offensive lineman originally from the state of Michigan. I like those. He's tough and mean. He's a lot like Cason Henry, who was the starter last year. Arnett could play inside, but they like him outside right now. about 6'5", 300. So I, hey, good, good. Let's go, you know, with him. Give me Midwest offensive lineman. And in case you're wondering, so this would be on these five. Let's just hypothetically do it. Carter Miller is originally from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Or Brentwood. I'm sorry, Brentwood, Tennessee. Hank Purvis is from Kansas. Arnett's from Michigan. So that's Midwest-ish in Midwest. Poku's from North Carolina. His family's originally from Ghana. He was born in Brooklyn, New York, and then Shed's from Gaffney, of course. So you got some geographic flavor mixed in there. I like, you know, that kind of thing. But we'll see kind of how it all shakes out up front. That's not the starters set in stone. You know, Purvis, Miller, and Poku were kind of the first group the last time. So logic dictates maybe these are the guys they kind of are at least considering on the inside. But, I kind of honestly feel more, nothing against Seth Smith because nobody really knows. You know, I'm not going to, nobody, you know, people were trashing him. They're in trouble if they have to start him at left tackle. I'm not saying that. Seth Smith could be really good. But do I feel more comfortable about the knowns based on, Shed playing out there? Yeah. Shed can really do anything. You know, this is a guy at 300 and almost 340 pounds when he was at Gaffney, a coach I knew went by, told the story before. I kind of feel like I repeat myself sometimes, but stood flat-footed in a gym and two-hand dunked a basketball. Coach couldn't believe it. I mean, one of the more underrated guys, and then the recruiting guys, when they finally figured him out and, like, found him, I don't know how you can't find players at Gaffney. They have players every year. But sometimes college coaches don't find players at Gaffney. It's right off of I-85. If you're recruiting the upstate or Charlotte, if you're recruiting Charlotte and Atlanta, get your butt by there, man. A lot of great players come from Gaffney that just get overlooked for some reason. I don't know why that is. It's as football of a town as there ever has been, and great athletes, great football in Gaffney, South Carolina. Always will be. Always will be. God willing, and the creek don't rise, right? But they found out about him. He went out to the Navy All-American Bowl and was just like, oh, God, he's a stud. Yeah, he's a stud. He's a stud. And plenty of other schools sniffing around about him with the portal. So, but he's one they definitely did not want to lose. Him and Ajita Hoon were the guys that they really wanted to keep. Josiah, too. And Josiah's redshirting, of course. And hopefully we're back with the Gamecocks in 2027. So that's how the offensive line shakes out. We talked about that a bunch, and we're going to get a professional's opinion on the offensive line later today on the morning show. I wanted to talk, though, about this. We had G.A. Mangus on, speaking of the morning show, the other day, and he said some intelligent things. First of all, he did say something about the O-line that made sense, and it's kind of what I've heard. David Pollack mentioned it. Urban Myers mentioned it. You are not alone, Gamecock fans. Sometimes we do think we're alone out here in the vast sea of losing in men's sports and the great collapse. We're going to look back and call it the great collapse of 2025-26. The good thing about a collapse is you rebuild, you know. You got nowhere to go but up. But, we're all kind of floating in this river of poop right now because of all the losing. And so sometimes it's hard to kind of look around. Well, lots of people are saying it. G.A. Mangus said it the other day because, during his interview, he was talking about Sellers and how much the protection hurt him last year. And the first thing he said was, nobody's happy with their offensive line in college football. And there's other people that have said it too. And if you watch college football, sometimes that's true. I mean, when you're talking last year, Ohio State won the national championship, and they were outraged about their offensive line. They won the national championship. It's Ohio State. I just talked about Midwest. They get any Midwest offensive lineman they want. You know, some schools were pretty good. Notre Dame was in 24 on the O-line. I thought they were pretty good. I thought Indiana was excellent last year up front. Miami had a good offensive line. But some of the, Clemson was expecting to have their best offensive line ever. And I think injuries kind of played a factor there, but that wasn't anything. They got Matt Luke coaching them. I think Matt Luke's really good. You know, Florida, they all summer, all we heard was how great Florida's offensive line was. Did anybody think they were great? No. I mean, so, you know, The Athletic wrote a piece about it being an epidemic, but the whole thing was about how, oh, the blue bloods aren't 15 deep, and they tried to skew it into this portal thing. I don't know that it's a portal thing. I don't know. I mean, because you look at who's actually playing, and it's not like, oh, well, they lost all their guys here, there, and yonder. I think there's a lot to it that we'll get into on another episode. But he said that, and then he talked about how when he was the offensive coordinator or quarterback's coach, co-coordinator under Steve Spurrier, that what they did was, and he said that they weren't like the Eagles up front or whatever. I mean, they had some offensive lines that were good, but very interesting, you know, was especially with young quarterbacks, you know, they would try to get him out of the pocket, the quarterback out of the pocket, Steven Garcia, you know, Connor Shaw, and then work their way up to the pocket stuff, you know? And then he said by the time Dylan Thompson played, Dylan had been playing for a while, and he would be more of a stand in the pocket type of guy. Right. And so he said, eventually you're going to have to stand in the pocket and take a hit. But he said, what it does when you don't have protection, and it doesn't matter who you are, you know, you're sitting there and you're right-handed and somebody's coming from your left side and you don't see them. It's like, it hurts. He said, GA played the position. He played quarterback. Was a walk-on at Florida under Spurrier, played in high school. He played the spot. And he said, it's not, people just think it's easy. It's not. And he's like, you can get gun-shy. He's like, and it's not that you're scared. He said, it's that you tend to be worried about that instead of reading, you know, making your reads, knowing where to go with the ball, operating the offense. He's like, and the great ones eventually block that out. Now, you can even have great ones, though. When they go to the NFL, let's say they're not good up front or deficient, and they can kind of get gunshot. The good news is that it doesn't always, you know, there's been a few cases where I think it's ruined some quarterbacks just getting hit over and over. But most of the time, they bounce back with development and playing more. It's just it's one of those things. So Lenoris was not protected last year. And here was GA's point as it relates to the big bad plan on offense. And he didn't say way too many pocket passes, but you could infer it. You know, when you drop back seven and a half, you know, seven step drop or whatever, and you have to sit in the pocket, you have to have a pocket, right? And this should have been recognized early last season, early. You don't sit there and wait on the pocket to get better, especially when you have evidence of how many different years of bad offensive line play. You don't wait. You know, it's magically going to get better. You know, you make changes on the offensive line, and then you have to adjust your offense. You have to get your guy out of the pocket. You know, and then you think about, and I still refuse to believe, and I don't believe it because I've been told otherwise, that Mike Shula, because he's not this type of guy, mandated, you threatened Lenoris, don't you run, stay in the pocket, whatever. I do think, though, that was something they were emphasizing all offseason, because when you looked at Lenoris Sellers and what he needed to work on, and Mangus mentioned this, it was the lower body fundamentals, and part of that is setting your feet, staying in the pocket, delivering the ball accurately. And I think Lenoris Sellers overcompensated as far as what he was doing play to play and the things he was emphasizing, trying to get better because he's a smart guy. And then there was no protection. And then on top of that, teams designed special defenses to attack that protection to where even if you had decent protection, there's an extra guy spying him so he doesn't run. With all of that, you know, you're dead before you start. I mean, you start thinking about, you know, some of the big plays he made last year. he'd get out of the pocket and fire it down the field. Sometimes on his own, that strike he threw on 4th and 12 to his brother against Alabama, it was a pocket play, and then he recognized he felt the pressure, and then just sidestepped and kind of rolled out a little and hit his brother for a big play. You know, some of those long plays against that he threw to Nick Harbor were kind of rollouts. I thought that Mike Furry did a good job of getting him out more, you know, once he took over. But that's he's not the type of guy that, especially, you know, when all right, so think about what we've just talked about here. Nobody in college football has this great protection. What makes you think South Carolina is going to, you know, when nobody's doing it? It's just the nature of things. And then, you know, Mangus mentioned too, you're kind of a sitting duck because the end knows, okay, he's going to be dropping back right here to this point. All I got to do is get there. I got to beat the tackle one-on-one with a bull rush or speed rush. Going to get by him, and I'm going to hit him. I'll knock the crap out of him. You know? And so you're kind of a sitting duck. And what Mangus said was, you know, they need to take better advantage of his skill set. You know, the NFL pocket passing stuff, yeah, Lenore's going to have to sit in the pocket and throw the ball in the NFL. There's no question. But that'll come. That's for down. That's for when he gets there. They've taught other quarterbacks that. So that's the bottom line with the pocket passing thing. And it's not that there's no pocket passing in this offense. It's that this offense has everything. And what they choose, what Kendall Briles chooses to implement in games and run in games is based on the strengths and weaknesses of his personnel, which is what I think you should always do in college on offense. Because some years, even if you're a quote-unquote blue blood or whatever, you're deficient. Maybe you recruited 6'5" stars or 6'4" and 5 stars at a position. You know, let's call it running back. Two of them are hurt. Two of them are bust. You have one guy that's good, starter good, but not great. So it's him and a couple of guys that are really misses that should, you know, that probably should hit the portal at the end of the season. So, you know, these guys can't break tackles. You know, they can't catch the ball. So what are you going to do? Well, a good coordinator is going to say, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to, you know, be sneaky about the run game. Maybe sneak a little draw in there every now and then, but I'm going to get my quarterback out on the perimeter, maybe run a little option, a little zone read, assuming I have a quarterback that can run. If you don't have a quarterback that can run, you don't have good running backs, you're kind of screwed anyway. But I'm going to get the ball to my receivers in the run game, and we'll throw short, we'll go quick game, go short pass, that kind of thing. So that's what good coordinators do. Bad coordinators or coordinators don't work out are just – all about, okay, well, this is it, and we can either do it or we can't, which is an NFL mentality, just to kind of shed some light on that. So what is Kendall Briles is going to do that? So here's the good news, folks. There's good news about tangible good news. Based on what I've been told by a couple of contacts that watch practice, they're, number one, I told you the other day, offense is operating much quicker. I think just tempo helps. Mangus mentioned tempo too. It's like they didn't run much tempo. Tempo is important. But then number two is there is a lot from what I've told, what's been observed of using Lenoris in ways that make sense, i.e. rolling him out, getting him out of the pocket, getting him on the run, getting him on the move, giving him options outside of the pocket. And at the times Carolina actually did that last year, it worked some of the time, some of the time it didn't. But it looks like there is a commitment to that, which I feel like sets Lenora Sellers up for better success. You know, people give him hell all the time, Lenoris, about being inaccurate, missing guys downfield and all that stuff. And what Mangus said, and I agree, and I've been saying this, is that if you're not back, I mean, it looks easier than it is, you know, especially when you have those kind of protection issues, especially when it's not something you're totally comfortable doing, and especially when you're trying to kind of overcompensate because it's been drilled in your head that NFL, 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 this is what you do. You got to do this to take the next step in your game. what should have happened and what probably would have happened had Dowell Loggins stayed is you ease that in, right? Dowell Loggins did not sit there and dial up plays based on what Lenora Sellers needed to work on. Now, before everybody rolls with this, because that makes Mike Shula sound like just a blithering idiot. He's not. And he didn't write the game plan and the plays. Oh, well, you know, we don't care if we win. This is just for Lenore. That's not true. Don't get that twisted with this. That's not what happened. I want to be clear about that. What I'm saying is, as a coordinator, he preferred the pocket passers because that pack passes because that's what he knew. That's what he's good at. He dialed those up, and he expected them to be executed because that was his offense. And, oh, by the way, Lenoris needs to be better at this anyway. So it's kind of this twisted stew of, I'm not going to say miscommunication, but there was a disconnect there. You know, what should have happened, and I think this would have happened had Dowell stayed, was, you know, we're going to work on the pocket passing. You know, we're going to dial them up every now and then. But our offense needs to be how Lenore Sellers can help us win football games and make big plays and be the star that he is. And I can't say that happened. I think in theory, on paper, it would have, but every single bad coordinator that's coached at this institution and elsewhere has had a great plan on paper. On the chalkboard, they're great. Yes, that will work. We just got to execute it. Well, that's the million-dollar question that I think a lot of coordinators that aren't very good miss. And what I think Kendall Briles does get, based on his comments and, you know, kind of just who he is that we just have to execute it is the question. There's some things in college at the college level you cannot execute. You just can't do it. It's too complex. It's too vanilla. The margin for error is too small. This is another thing I like about Briles' offense and the high school roots. A lot of times, you know, you'll have a great play, but, man, it depends on everybody executing at 100% level. You know, one person does one thing wrong, and the whole thing just doesn't – it's not just ineffective. It's a complete disaster, right? In other words, i.e., it's probably leading to a turnover or lost yardage play. And I'm talking pass game here. Run game's kind of the same. So that was, I think pass game wise, that you're looking at a situation with Briles and Sellers to where it's going to play to his strengths. Right now, Lenore still has to go out and play. There's some things a lot of things he needs to work on. He has to get the offense down cold. I've mentioned RPO and all that good stuff. But I thought it was refreshing to hear that, hey, what it looks like they're doing out there now is not what they were doing last year. And I'm glad Briles and Beamer both are like, you know, yeah, there's not any carryover this year from that. What there is, you know, there's always some carryover. I mean, run game inside zones, basically inside zone. You know, there's certain pass plays that are similar as far as the route tree and the reads and all that. But, man, just hearing that got me more confident that this is going to be a really good marriage between Kendall Briles and Lenora Sellers. I just think that I think his skill set just fits more to a sort of wide open, simple to execute, move around out of the pocket, fast tempo offense. And I've always believed that. And I think Dowell Loggins was kind of getting there, just to be honest. I don't want to throw shade at that guy because we always talk about like the last 5 years or whatever. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just because Shula and Satterfield were so bad. I don't know that Dowell was that bad. In fact, I think sometimes he dialed up some really good plays at the right time. And the offense under him, you know, yeah, there was some pro stuff, and it struggled, you know. But it started to click, and toward the end of 2024, you know, it looked pretty doggone good. you know, a little bit. He kind of loosened up a bit and all that. So I don't know. Wish him the best at App State, but I always want to mention that because I don't want people to think I'm just lumping every single thing in for the entire Beamer era. For those 2 years, I thought Dowell did some good things. But anyway, that all that's over. It's now a college offense. It's aggressive, creative, and fun. And it's Kendall Briles, the Briles offense, the old Baylor offense. And, you know, the good news is, too, it's worked in the SEC. Kendall made it work at Arkansas. Josh Heupel, Alex Golish kind of runs something similar now. He's at Auburn. Lane Kiffin does a lot of it. So it's kind of similar to the better offenses that you see around the Southeastern Conference, and that has to be exciting. But the usage of Lenora Sellers was going to be important. It is important, and I can confirm right now that it makes sense. All right, folks, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I'm going to talk to you on the ITG special, the show / the morning show. Getting rolling at 10. Lots of guests today. Enjoy Gamecock baseball tonight as much as you can. You're going to enjoy it better if they win. And then, once again, no four-quarter Friday today. That show will return at some point. Late-night Gamecock show and SEC Sunday night on Sundays. And we'll do it all again Monday here with coffee. It's been J.C. Sherbert with coffee. It's been a great week, folks. Hope you have a good rest of your day. I'm out. Holla.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
My name is Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.